Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with nationally known jazz musician Pete Barenbrink. Pete is known for his... A multi-talented musician. Pete plays saxophone, flute, clarinet, and piccolo. He's been a clinician, an educator, a music editor, a recording artist whose CDs have garnered extraordinary praise. He's also been the non-commissioned musical director of the very prestigious United States Air Force jazz band known as the Airmen of Note. Pete's story is particularly interesting because he doesn't come from a musical family, and he wasn't particularly drawn to music as a young man. So the story of how music found him, how he found his deep and committed passion to jazz, is quite interesting. So hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh,
welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being the person you really are. It may seem odd to say that many people are actually demonstrating, actually acting out a person who's a version of who they are, but not the whole person that they are. Too many people are acting out what I like to call their cover story. Now, you know, as a spy has a cover story, their cover story is designed to protect them, because if the truth about them were known, then they would be in danger. Well, this is equally true of many too many of us. The cover story which many people are presenting was also designed as an attempt to protect them from some kind of danger. That danger is usually criticism, teasing, embarrassment, punishment, which occurred usually in childhood, usually in family of origin, but can also occur in school, with peers. Even teachers have been known to disparage children. Religious organizations, cultural organizations lay down rules about what it is good to be, what it is bad to be, what you ought to be, what you oughtn't to be. And if you happen to be a child who is not one of those things, or is one of those things that is not sanctioned, then quite often what happens is that child comes to think of him or herself as flawed, unattractive, sometimes even evil, weak, unpleasant, unlovable. Well, this is unacceptable. Children cannot survive that. And so, because children are malleable and flexible, they are quite able to begin to find ways to downplay these characteristics and pretend that they are not these things. Over time, they begin to believe these pretenses. They really are not that. They really do not do that, like that, want that, act that, sound like them. And so they come into adulthood pretending to be other than they are, presenting their cover story. Now, for a spy, when the spy goes home, they can take off the cover story and be who they really are. But for so many people who have had to pretend that something about them was not true, they don't take off the cover story. They continue not only to act out the cover story, but to believe the cover story. Well, the problem with this is that all those qualities, characteristics, ways of being that they are desperate to pretend are not so, are actually still so. They have gone undercover. And when you have things about yourself which you are pretending are not true, that creates a kind of dissonance. We all know when there is something about us that we are hiding or pretending. We may not know that consciously, but we certainly know it unconsciously. We feel that, if you only really knew us, you wouldn't like us, that there's something flawed or bad or wrong about us. This is a terrible way to live and not necessary. So the Lynn Show is about saying that if this happened to you, if you were forced to hide something important about yourself, it may not be too late to recover that, to get it back. Even if there were things that you believe you could have been, wanted to be, yearned to be, when other people are doing things which you think, oh, I'd really like to do that, but I really can't. Maybe you really can, and your capacity to do that is simply hiding undercover. Well, if you think this happened to you, and you want to talk to me about that, you can find me on my website. That is thelynshow.com, thelynneshow, thelynshow.com. Go up on my website, click on the email tab, and ask me any questions that you would like. I will be happy to answer them. In my shows, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be the person you really are. And in Pete Barenbrecht, you hear what it sounds like to be the person you really are. As I said in the run-up, Pete didn't come into this life thinking about music. But once he found it, he knew absolutely, and as you'll hear him say, he jumped in with both feet. And when you listen to him, you can hear the commitment, the passion, the attachment, the delight, the joy that he found this thing, which allows him to demonstrate who he really is. Luckily, Pete gave me a couple of CDs in which he is playing, and I'm going to play a little bit from one of the CDs. I'm going to play a little piece of My Shining Hour. And then we're going to go into Pete's interview. And then at the end of the show, I'm going to play another song from his CD. So here now is My Shining Hour, followed by my interview with Pete. Here with Pete Berenbreg, and I'm explaining to Pete that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, and I am making the assumption, as I have seen you play, that the art to which you have given your life and made your living is the art of music?
That is correct. I am a jazz musician.
Yes, yes, to jazz music,
yes.
In fact. Okay, so I only ask one question, and it is, can you tell me the very first moment in your life when you noticed music, were drawn to music, thought music was interesting, fun, attractive?
Sure. I believe it was in probably 9th or 10th grade in high school.
Okay, 9th or 10th grade, you would be 14, 15?
Yeah, right. And my band director, who ultimately was my mentor, if you will, liked jazz, and we had a jazz band. You know,
like wait a minute. Band director, does that mean you're already playing by then?
Yes, okay.
Yeah, back up.
Let's rewind a bit.
Yes, good.
So I started playing the clarinet when I was in fifth grade.
And why did you?
I thought it would be cool to be in the band.
Okay, so... You know, not every young boy thinks it's cool to be in the band.
That's true. And the irony is no one in my family plays music.
Amazing. So more and curiouser and curiouser, as they say.
Right.
So do you have any idea where this came from in you? What you might have seen or heard earlier?
You know, nothing comes to my mind that to answer your initial question
about
what sparked me, but to... address what you just said, all I can think of, I don't really have anything I can hang on to for that question, but it must have been something I saw on TV.
Ah!
That's the only, and I don't have that memory, but...
No.
But that's the only logical
answer. No, and that's what occurred to you anyway, that you probably saw something on TV.
Mm-hmm.
That is really interesting. So, okay, let's assume that that's correct. You saw something on TV that made either music or the clarinet intriguing to you. So in the fifth grade, you said, I want to play the clarinet?
Well, actually, when I went to the open house to be in the band, you know, to select your instrument.
Okay, so you said, I want to be in the band.
Yeah, I wanted to play in the music program to
my
parents.
Right.
So then they take me to the open house, whatever it was, where you go and you pick your instrument.
Right.
And I wanted to play the trumpet.
Aha! Uh-huh.
And by the time I got to the front of the line...
No more trumpets.
He said, no, but I have, like, long, long fingers. He said, you'd be great for the clarinet.
Wow.
And I said, sure. Why not?
Okay, so when you told your parents that you wanted to be in the band, they said just okay? They didn't say, oh, good, or why, or any of that?
Yeah, I think that's it. It wasn't like, oh, wow, or, you know, you shouldn't do that. No,
yeah,
it was pretty bland.
Okay, do you remember why you wanted the trumpet? Had you ever heard a trumpet? Or you just like what it looked like?
Well, you know, when you're a little kid and you see someone playing cool stuff on the trumpet, you know?
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, good. So through
some...
Of course,
I don't play the trumpet, but that's another story.
No, I know. So through this sort of happenstance, you wind up with the clarinet.
Yes.
In the fifth grade.
Yes.
And so, do you like it?
Yeah, I wasn't really gung-ho. I was not excelling.
Yeah.
I was just playing the clarinet, you know, and of course, when you start, you know, you're not really in the band. You just take lessons, you know, from the band director and such. And then a couple of years later, we moved to Wilmington, Delaware. And that's when I got into a larger band, not a jazz band, but a concert band.
Now, is it in school?
Yes.
Yeah, and you're still playing the clarinet.
Still playing the clarinet, and the band director, who's the guy I mentioned before, mm-hmm. was the band director of this band, which is in junior high school, seventh grade.
Yeah.
Okay, so I did that, seventh grade, eighth grade. Then I got to high school in ninth grade, and the same band director moved up to high school level.
Really?
Yes, I don't know, just coincidence. And, like I say, his passion was jazz, even though he did, you know, everything else.
He had to make a living, so he was doing what the school wanted.
And then he convinced me to, in addition to playing the clarinet, I was pretty good. I wasn't like, wow, fantastic, but I was above average, shall we say. But he saw something in me, and he kind of talked me into learning how to play the saxophone.
How interesting.
Keeping the clarinet, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I played the clarinet still in the band, in the concert band, but I play now the saxophone in the jazz band. And that answers the first question. What was the spark? What touched me?
Yes.
And that was it.
Jazz.
Yes. That and what he had to offer all the students in the band, and it just hit me. So
What he had to offer, which was his passion for it?
Yes.
How much he loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he would play recordings for us. It's like, oh wow, that's really cool. You know, I like to do that. So yeah, and I think that's what it is when people play music, you know, whatever kind of music it is. It doesn't have to be jazz. Something touches you, you know.
Yes, yes. So I always like to make this point whenever anybody says this, and a number of people do, that the power that a teacher can have.
Right.
Right? And you said something else that I hear from time to time for people, that he saw something in me. I've heard this from actors, I've heard this from painters, I've heard this from musicians, that a teacher can see something that you didn't know was there.
Right?
Just amazing. I always want to point that out, because unfortunately the opposite is also true, and teachers do things that turn people off instead of turning them on. But so do you know why he wanted you to play the saxophone? I mean, you could play jazz clarinet. No?
Well, it was a, like a big band with, you know, five sound, you know, like a...
So
it had that instrumentation. So he needed sax players. Now, you know, he's no longer with us. So the question is, did he just need another sax player?
Yes.
And he talked me into it? Or... who knows what? I don't know the answer.
Yes,
but
no.
Whatever it is, it was mysterious, but it worked.
Yeah, mysterious. I love that. Okay, so you're now 14, 15, right?
Right.
And this captures you, right?
It captures me, and I get pretty good pretty fast, you mm-hmm. know? And like when I was like in 11th or 12th grade, our jazz band would go to these jazz festivals, you know, for high school kids. And I win all these soloist awards, and I really got some recognition,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, these scholarships to jazz camps and trophies, all that kind of junk. And so, you know, I had recognition.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And you said that your family, nobody plays in your family. How did they like this? Did they care? Did they notice?
Yeah, I think my mother did. My father probably didn't care a whole lot,
mm-hmm.
but that's another discussion.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay, good. So, well... when you say that, it suggests to me that you didn't follow in his footsteps somehow.
No.
No, he, right.
I mean, he was a businessman, and
right.
he was, you know, it was fine, but, you know.
Did he want you to be?
To be?
Do you think?
I don't think he didn't get it.
No, he didn't get it, right.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I mean, that also is kind of magical, that you come from a family where your role model didn't get it.
Right.
Right? And so you become this other thing.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
And you become this other thing with a vengeance.
Yep.
I mean, I've heard you play, so
I jumped in with both feet.
Yeah. That's what I'm imagining. So tell me about that. What does that mean, both feet? I mean, so you're in school.
Well,
and,
you know, I was kind of your basic band geek in high school.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I don't mean a nerd so much, but you know, that was my circle of friends,
right?
Other band members, and just as a little aside, you know, when they have high school reunions and such, you know, I don't really care about it because I didn't really know anybody else in the school other than the guys and the women, the girls and the guys in the band.
Right.
That was my world.
Right. Right.
And that was good. You know.
Right. Yeah. No. Right. Yeah. No. And in fact, this is another thing that I hear. I hear a lot from actors. I found my place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these were my people, and this
sure.
was my place. Right. So it's not only that you loved the thing, but that you had a community.
Right.
Right. That you were part of, that you could feel a part of. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm not making that up. Right.
You're correct.
Okay. Good. All right. So high school. I'm assuming you did okay in your academic work.
Yeah. I graduated. I got into college.
Yeah, well, that was my next question. So are you thinking in high school, this is what I want to do, or that hasn't happened yet?
You know, I don't think it was like I want to be a musician. I ended up going to college for music education, to become a teacher. And it was never like, oh, I want to be a band director, you know. But it's almost like that was kind of the path that was the obvious choice for me to go into music in some capacity. I don't think at that age I said to myself, I want to do this or I want to do that. And not too many people really
No. So you were just doing, because music was clearly important and you could do it.
Yes.
So you thought, maybe I can do something with this for my life. Maybe I could teach, maybe I could
right.
something,
I mean,
right?
You know, did I want to be a lawyer? No. Did I want to be a doctor? No. Did I want to be an Indian chief? No. You know, I wanted to play music.
Yeah, okay, good. So where did you go and what did you major in?
I went to Westchester University, which is just outside of Philadelphia. I majored in music education, and I did all that.
Yeah? And how was that? Did you like it?
It was good. I played jazz in high school, in the college band and such, you know. Yeah, it was great. I had a good time.
Yeah? Yeah. Okay, good. Okay, so you graduate.
I graduate.
And then what?
And then I get a job teaching. I was a band director.
Uh-huh. Okay. In high school?
Junior high school.
Junior high school. Okay, right. Good. So how long did
and
you
the
do
reason,
that?
And the reason I wanted to do junior high school, once again, this is a little aside, is in high school they have marching band.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't like
that? I didn't want any part of that. I just wanted to be, you know. And junior high, you know, the kids are a challenge, shall we say.
Oh.
But they have a great potential.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good. And I liked it, you know.
You like teaching?
Yeah. And I keep in mind, I was playing gigs. I was playing music all the time and expanding my horizons. And I'm playing with much older people, more experienced people. And that's where I really learned how to play. Because in college, you know, I studied music, but I didn't really study jazz.
Ah.
So what I know how to do jazz-wise, I learned from listening.
On the job training.
Yes, exactly. OJT.
OJT. Yeah. So so how did you get to play with these guys? How did that happen?
Well, in music, as in the other arts, you know, somebody hears you, oh, you're pretty good, hey, and then somebody tells somebody else, and then, hey, let's hire this kid, you know, you can do this.
Okay, and so that's how it happened?
Sure.
So you're working day and night now?
Yeah, I mean, as I was teaching school, like I said, and I'm playing lots of gigs,
mm-hmm.
you know, some jazz, some weddings and you know other schlock, but
right. Just playing,
gig.
Right?
Gig's
right.
a gig, you know.
Right.
So doing that, and I continued that for about 8 years, and then I heard about I'm in Wilmington, Delaware at the time. I heard an opening in Washington D.C. with the Air Force Jazz Band called the Airmen of Note, which is the premier band. It's like big time. They're great, and. And I had heard them. I'm saying, holy cow, these guys are amazing. I never heard anything like this before.
Mm-hmm.
So, somebody else had told me about this opportunity. So I got a phone number and I called down to the Air Force Band. Yes, they're having auditions. Yes, I'd like to audition. Blah, blah, blah. Go down there. And actually, a friend of mine from college was in the band. I didn't even know it at the time. So I do the audition and I was reluctant to join, because you have to join the Air Force.
I was just going to say, don't you have to be in the Air Force?
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes, I mean...
So wait a minute. Oh, I'm sorry. This is so funny. I would have thought that they would have auditioned people in the Air Force, taken them from in the Air Force to be in the band.
Well, when they have an opening,
right,
they have a lot of people who audition, some civilians trying to get in, and some existing Air Force musicians from other bands.
This is a funny way to get people in the Air Force.
Well, it's not so much they're trying to get civilians to join the Air Force. They're trying to get the best person.
No, I understand that, but still, you have to be in the Air Force, right?
I will. If I'm going to be in that band, yes, I have to enlist in the Air Force.
Okay, so you auditioned.
I auditioned, and they offered me the job, and I'm thinking, well, gee, do I want to do this? You know, this is a big jump, you know. And then I was telling somebody, and they said, you know, you only regret the things you didn't do.
Right, yeah.
So I said, okay, I'll do it. So I did it.
So what did it mean to be in the Air Force?
Well, it was a interesting situation. Actually, when I got out of college, let me backtrack for a second. When I got out of college, I got drafted.
Oh.
So.
Into what?
Army?
Into the,
yeah, like, you know, you had a draft number.
I remember.
And so my number came up because I had a deferment while I was in college.
Right.
And once I graduated, poof, I was available.
When was that?
1970.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So I was only 12 years old at the time.
I see that.
Just kidding.
No, I see that, but I'm thinking because when they were doing the lottery, that was Vietnam.
Yeah, this was the very tail end.
I
got the old letter that says report for... So I'm thinking, gee, I don't think I want to do that.
No kidding.
So I joined the National Guard Band in Delaware, which was not really jazz, but it was the answer to my solution to my problem.
They took you?
Yes.
So then you were
And I had to go through basic training for that.
Ugh.
And that was the Army, actually, Army. And I did, it was a six-year commitment. And you go one weekend a month. And you go 2 weeks in the summer, you know, so it's like...
Unless it's now and you're in Afghanistan.
Yeah, well, that's a different story.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So anyhow, I did that for 6 years while I was teaching, and then I finished that. I didn't really have a good experience in that military galaxy that I was in, you know.
That's the point I was just going to say.
I didn't hate it, but it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to stay in the military. I got out and I'll see you.
You did what you had to do.
I did my... By honorable discharge from the National Guard, everything was good. They loved me. I loved them. Bye-bye.
Right. And you didn't have to go, you didn't have to fight. You didn't have to be in, right. Ooh, wow. Okay, good. And you didn't have to go to Canada.
Right.
So no matter how much you don't want to be in the service, you wind up.
Yes, until I heard this band, the Airmen of Note.
Yeah, I got it.
Which was spectacular. And I said, I need to do this.
So what did it require of you?
I mean, to join the Air Force?
Yes.
Okay, so when I decided I did want to join the Air Force and be in the Airmen of Note, I had a contract that says that's what I'm going to be doing specifically in that band, in that location, period.
Oh, okay.
So I wouldn't be just in the Air Force and then be driving a truck or dropping bombs or whatever. So, all right, so...
So that's the only thing you did? You only played? You had no other requirements from the Air Force?
What do you mean, only played?
Well, I meant you were lucky enough to
simply
have to play.
Yes, it was a very demanding job and a very elite organization.
Yes.
And I felt extremely privileged to be in it. And I was very successful at it, you know. So, and I shortly after, a couple of years later, I became the director of that group, too.
Oh, my gosh.
So, and I traveled the world. We did everything.
Oh, so it wasn't just this location.
Oh, no. This is big time. You know, I played for presidents and the White House and the whole thing. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we traveled kings and queens and the whole thing. It was a fantastic career.
And you were happy.
Yes, I loved it. I really did. And I did a little bit more than 20 years.
Wow.
And, so I had a career, and then I would have stayed. I didn't get out because I didn't retire from the Air Force because I wanted to leave.
I have a question, actually.
Sure.
Two things. First, was there a time commitment? I mean, when you signed up, you had to be in
So you will enlist for 4 years at a time.
Okay, so 4, 8, 12, 16, 20. So you re-upped for five times or something?
Yep.
Right?
Exactly. Yep.
Right. So at every 4 years, you could have opted to say, I don't want to do this anymore?
Correct.
Okay. And so, you know, it's interesting. You said that you developed the skill that you developed, OJT, when you were teaching. So you were, I don't know what, in your 20s, mm-hmm. right? And but you didn't study?
I worked at it, of course.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, you didn't work with a teacher to learn stuff or whatever. You just did it yourself.
I never actually studied with a jazz educator in the true sense. I think I, you know, nowadays there's a million books and there's other things. There's so much media that it will help you do all these things. It's great. At that time, there was very little. And so the way you learn how to play was the old school way. You listen and you copy and you sometimes fail and you figure out what you need to do and you do it.
Yeah, you know, I hear it. And I really just want to make this point
right.
that it can be done this way.
Yes, it can be done. And that is the, you know, you can learn how to play through books to a certain extent, but the real thing.
Yeah, it's the real thing.
Yeah, that's where you find out. And it's a learning environment, you know, where you go and you play with people who are better than you, and then I'm not so good at this, or I can't do that, or gee, I wonder what that was, or that's a funny key, or this song is weird, or it's too fast, or too slow, or you know, a million things.
Yeah.
And you just calculate all these things in your mind, you figure out what I need to do to be able
to get
to do
there,
that. And then I'd go home and I'd learn how to do that. And then the next opportunity, I could do it.
Yes, I got it. This is what you do if you really want it.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
And if you really want it, then you can get it this way.
Yes, and you know, playing music, once again, I'm not an actor or anything like that, but you know, you want to be successful. You want to play well. You know, you want to get adulation from your peers.
Ah, yes.
You know. Hey, nice solo. Good job.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, nothing.
Yes.
You know, and then you feel, oh, maybe I didn't do so well. What can I do to become better at this?
Yeah.
You know, it's human nature.
Okay, so it's interesting, too, because you didn't start out with, I really have to do this, I really want to do this. This came to you from your band director, and once you found it, as you say, you jumped in with both feet, right? Okay, so you're playing with the...
in the Air Force with the Airmen of Note.
The Airmen of Note, is that what it is?
Airmen of Note, yes, that's the name of the band. It's the premier jazz ensemble of the United States Air Force.
Phew, okay,
and,
good.
And it's in Washington, D.C., and that's a permanent location. I don't get shipped around to other places. That's
right. Oh, that was what you meant by permanent location. Is that where you live?
Yeah, then I had to move to the D.C. area.
Right. Okay,
correct.
Good. Okay. So you said you became the band director? How did that happen?
Well, I was successful in the band, and the guy who was the director retired. And, you know, in the military, there's rank. And there's people that were a higher rank than me, but I was the best guy for the job.
Hold on a second. So what was your rank?
Well, see the thing, to be in the band
in
the Airmen of Note, you have to be enlisted. You cannot be an officer. I had an education, so I could have been an officer, but I didn't want to because then I couldn't play in the band. and the person who was the director of the band was a player also enlisted. So if I had elected to become a band commander, as it were, then I would be conducting a concert band or a marching band or whatever. I didn't want to do that. No, I wanted to do exactly what I was doing.
So everybody in the jazz band is enlisted.
Correct.
So then the director of the jazz band is going to be an enlisted man.
Yes, of this band.
Of this band, right? Okay, good. So the are they always a saxophone player?
No.
So when you say I was the best guy for the job, what does that mean?
As much as I was the best musician, I had the best leadership skills, and I had my act together. I'll put it that way.
So, who makes the decision?
Well, the commander of the whole Air Force band is like 220 people. The band I'm in, the Airmen of Note, is 18.
Ah, So there is somebody making these decisions.
And that guy's an officer. He's the commander.
Right.
A colonel.
And he understood that you were not only a really good musician, but that you had the leadership skills, and so you became... Were you surprised?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because usually they just pick the next guy in from a seniority standpoint.
Yes, and you were not.
No.
No, but I imagine you were very pleased.
Yes, but terrified at the same time.
I was just going to ask about that. Yes.
Oh, tremendous.
Yeah, okay. So, did you like it?
Usually.
When did you not like it?
Well, you know, in that position, you, how can I phrase this? You can, I was one of the guys.
Yes.
And now
oh,
all of a sudden,
yes.
You know, I was one of the guys in the back of the bus.
Yes.
Now I'm in the front of the bus. Not really the bus, but...
No, I understand this.
Speech, right?
This happens corporate all the time when they bring somebody up to higher management, and then there's a...
Manager, that's essentially, that was what I was.
That's
and a player.
Right.
You know, so I'm still playing, doing well, and now I'm in charge of everything.
So was there some jealousy? Did somebody mind?
I'm sure some people did, but it never became an issue that I'm aware of.
Right.
You know?
So, but there is a distance now.
Yes, because, you know, when someone's... I have to be the heavy sometimes, you know?
So what heavy stuff did you have to do?
Well, you're in the Air Force, and you have to abide by the rules, and, you know, you can't be... And you have to be in the box.
Yeah, but what would be out of the box?
Well...
You wear the wrong clothing, you stay up too late.
Well, of course, your uniform has to be right, you got to have a haircut, you have to look good, you have to be on time, you have to be able to play your part. If you're not playing the music well, we got a problem.
So sometimes they were out of the box, some people would not, and you would have to say, straighten up?
Yeah, or we'll have to make a change, you know.
Wow, could you do that? I mean, was that a natural or a comfortable thing for you?
No,
it was
unnatural.
Yeah, I can see that it does
these
not
are
look.
My friends.
Yes, of course.
And I knew that I had to. It wasn't like I distanced myself intentionally. It just evolved that way, you know.
Yes.
You know, because, and then of course I don't answer to the band. I answer to my boss.
Yes, of course.
And when he or she would say, you know, you need to do this, 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 and this, and I'd say, well. I mean, it's like any job, you know. You're kind of middle management, you know.
Oh yeah, no, I got it. Did you get? Is there a higher pay grade?
Yeah.
Oh well, that's nice, and of course, looks great on your resume.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good. But it does come with. I mean, and forgive me, but you come across as a kind of gentle person.
Hmm.
Is that a lie? I mean, did I get that wrong?
Well, I was not like a tough guy, you know.
No.
I didn't do that, and that's not my style.
No.
And I think they respected that. My peers respected that.
Right. But you were able to do the job when it was required.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. So 20 years, that's a career.
Yes, it is a career.
So, and you could have stayed, so why did you leave?
Because I was 49 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that if I wanted to do something else, as far as not just music, but some other day job, if you will, that I needed to get out to do that.
That you would rapidly be too old to start a new career.
Perhaps, yes.
Yeah. So did you have something in mind that you wanted to do?
Well, I initially thought I would go and become a teacher again. And then I was playing a lot of gigs and such, very busy doing that. And I would do these recording sessions for music publishers. And the guy running those recording sessions would say, you know, there's an opening for an editor for Warner Brothers music publisher. And you'd be good for that. And I'd say, of course, I was out of the Air Force at the time.
Right.
Retired. And
editor, does this mean music editor?
Yes, exactly.
So I guess you can do that.
Well, my first question was, what's a music editor?
Really? Really?
You know, I didn't know anything about this.
Right.
And he gave me the number of the guy. The company was in Miami at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Called the guy and we talked, and he had to come up to D.C. to Washington for some other business, so we met, and he explained what the job was, and it's basically a music publisher, you know, publishes different types of music, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's piano music, there's vocal music, there's band, there's orchestra, and so on, and there's jazz, and there's marching band, and everything else in the world, guitar, you know, you name it. So I was in charge of all the jazz print music, which is basically like big band jazz or small group things, you know. And my job would be to make it sellable.
Sellable?
I mean, in other words, I would have to... I had freelance arrangers and composers that they didn't work specifically for me. They were freelance.
Right.
But I would, you know, there's people that had been doing this for this company.
Right.
And when I became this editor, I'd...
So did you have to hear it or play it or read it?
I basically selected what we were going to publish. If it was a copyrighted piece of music, I would have to get that cleared, you know, and get a license
for it,
and do all that. Or not.
There's administrative stuff
absolutely,
here.
Absolutely, yeah, tremendous amount of that. And then I'd call the musicians or the arrangers, and I'd say, "Hey, I want you to write, you know, such and such a song in this key, at this difficulty level." These are for our market. Students, band.
Mm-hmm, you know? Right.
So this level, and I got to have it by this date, and everything was in the music software, you know, Finale or Sibelius
right.
at the time.
So yeah, right.
That's what they would do, and then I would assign them the work, and then when I would get that electronically, I would say, well, you know, we got to fix this, we got to fix this, I don't like this, blah, 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 you know, and I tell them what to fix, and they would fix it, or I would just fix it myself, depending on who it was. And
so you can read and write? Music, right? So you knew what you were reading,
yes.
Whether you liked it or you didn't like it.
Exactly.
But you're not talking about errors like, you know, this should be in concert and this shouldn't be in concert, or this is, you know, that's a dissonance and I don't want it there, or like that?
Yeah, all those things are, that's all in the blender.
Yeah.
All those things.
So you could do all that?
Yes.
Where did you learn that? Because so far I haven't heard. Music education doesn't teach you that. Okay.
Actually, when you say I taught myself, it sounds a little primitive. So, you know, I was in an environment that was very progressive and opportunities presented themselves, and I
took advantage of them. Okay, so then music editing, and the company is in Miami, and
right. And so the guy said, well, you know, he offered me the job. I said, well, I want the job, but I don't want to move to Miami, you know, because I was married and I had a couple of kids, little kids, you know. And
where were you living?
In D.C.
In so D.C., of course,
Maryland,
right,
just outside of Washington. Yeah, after I retired from the Air Force, I stayed there and I continued to work, because I had
a life.
I was working a lot of gigs.
Yeah, right.
In that click.
So I just want to say, so you got out thinking I might want to have a new career, but then you didn't leap at anything or try for anything.
No.
You just kept playing and playing, and apparently it was enough money and you were okay. And then this thing comes to you.
Right.
Kind of like how the Army band came to you.
Right. Air Force.
Right. The Air Force. Sorry.
Right.
The military band came to you.
Yeah.
And following the advice, you said yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And so when the guy said, you know, you have to move to Miami, I said, well, I want the job, but I don't really want to move to Miami. So, and everybody there at that time was working in the office in Miami. And I said, well, you know, we could move here, but we're not going to like it. And so he got permission from his boss to let me work remotely from my home.
Yeah, this is a gig you can do remotely, because
the whole thing was on computers anyway. Exactly.
Right.
So that was good. So I did that for a couple of years. And then this other company bought Warner Brothers Publications called Alfred Music. And they're in L.A. And so then they hired me to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I continued to do that. Anyhow, so I did that for 18 years.
Wow. Another career.
Yes, and I just retired from that this past March.
Oh, wow.
And that's when I decided to move down here. I had a really good friend here, and his wife lived in this community where I live. And in fact, I met this guy in seventh grade when I moved to be in the band.
Wow.
And we've been friends ever since. And I just liked it here. It's beautiful. And
it's not like you need a good reason to move here.
Yeah, I needed a change in my life.
Got it. Well, we're really glad you're here.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you play great.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. So, okay, so when did you come here? Well, not that long ago.
No, March.
March. March, gee, my gosh, it's not quite 6 months.
Yep.
Right, and so you're not sorry.
I'm not sorry.
Good. And do you want to talk about what you're doing here, playing here, where any of that?
Well, Sure. The thing with, you know, music stepping into a new community, you know, I was very well established in the Washington area.
Yeah.
You know, so I had plenty of work and everybody knew me and I was fine. And I had been back a couple times to do other gigs that I had already were on my books or they were lucrative enough to warrant me to go back. So when I get here, it's like, you know, I can tell people what I've done. You know, I mentioned the Airmen of No and I mentioned this, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's nice, but can you play?
Yeah, right. You know, they don't know.
You can talk.
Right.
But let's hear it. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I've been going to places to sit in
yeah.
for no money, just to sit in, to be heard. And people, oh, wow, this guy can play, you
yeah,
know.
Right.
And that's all good. And then they say, oh, gee, but it's the summertime, it's the off season, and there's not a lot going on. So, I mean, I've had like 4 or 5, 6 gigs,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I've gotten some other contacts, but I'm looking forward to the season.
Season,
you know,
yeah,
when things
yeah, yeah,
get busy.
Yeah.
Although right now, this week, I'm actually doing a musical in the Pit.
Oh, yes,
at
what?
At the Performing Arts Center in Tampa.
What is it?
It's the musical Motown.
Ah, yes.
It's pretty cool. And so in that show, you know, I'm in the Pit. I'm playing alto sax, flute, clarinet, and piccolo. So I've got a lot of stuff to do. So that's real good.
It's lovely. It's yeah. lovely. So I only have one other question.
Sure.
And it is, having given so much of your life to the art of music, mostly playing, could you say what that's like, what you think about it?
Well, I think I've been fortunate that I've always had, quote-unquote, a day job. Meaning, when I was teaching, I would be playing lots of gigs, but I had a day job as a
mm-hmm.
teacher.
Right.
And a steady income, if you will, and health benefits.
Right.
When I was in the Air Force, I was playing all the time, but I still had other music besides the Air Force.
Yeah.
And I had a steady paycheck and benefits for my family.
Mm-hmm.
And when I retired from the Air Force, I still had health insurance and I had a new job.
Yep.
A music publisher. So I had so I've always had a day job. And I never made a ton of money, but enough to survive, you know, and with gigs. And I feel fortunate because a lot of people, many of which can play 10 times better than me, have only been playing music, which
mm-hmm.
is great. But then when you get older, all of a sudden, you know, there's younger people that can do it better and can play better and look better, to be honest with you. You know what I mean? So
mm-hmm.
it's the way it is, you know? So I feel fortunate that all those things have worked out for me.
Yeah. I suspect that it's not actually fortune, but that it was a priority for you, that you were going, that it mattered to you that you could be able to support yourself and your family, and so you did things and took particular works that would do that. Do you think that's wrong?
Sure. I mean, yeah, everybody does that. You know, that's, yeah, everybody.
Well, no, you just said that lots of musicians don't do that.
Well, yeah, but like I say, I feel fortunate that I was able to be a successful professional musician and still have a day job. It was difficult at times to do
two
things, you know. And I've always had jobs that were responsible. I think when I was a teacher, I had a lot of responsibility in every respect, from the students to management.
Yes.
And in the Air Force, even more so.
Yes.
And in the business end of it, you know, in the editing, you know, I have to, you work for a company, they want you to produce. You know, you got to do what you got to do, and
yeah.
I figured out how to do that, and keep the music, the arrangers and composers that I would work for me, keep them happy, so they would want to keep
working for you.
Yeah, so, you know, and you said, like, I'm kind of easygoing, was that the word?
I said
you
gentle.
Gentle, okay. But I think people respect that, and, you know, they know my heart's in it, so.
Yes, it's a good place to stop. Thank you so much,
sure
Pete.
Thing.
So you hear Pete's pleasure at the life that he was able to choose, the work that he has been able to do. And, of course, his ability to do something that a lot of artists are not able to do, which is to continue to make a living. And make a living doing this thing that he so loves. Again, listening to Pete, I hope that you hear what it sounds like when you are being the person you really are. Being in sync with yourself. Not being at odds with yourself. I wish I was. I thought I was going to. Why couldn't I? How? Why haven't I? So how do you feel about your life? Do you feel the way Pete feels about his? That this is the life that you are meant to lead? That this is the life that you want to lead? Well, again, if this isn't true for you and you want to talk to me about that, please do go up on my website, thelinshow.com. Ask me any questions you would like. You can get a copy of my book up there. When you can, you will. Why you can't always do what you want to do and what to do about it. You can get me to come and speak to your group or organization. Well, we're going to go out on another cut from Pete's album. And I want to give credit to all the musicians because you're going to listen to most, maybe all of this. You're going to listen to most of this cut. This is a song called Speak Low. And it's Pete Berenberg on saxophones, Frank Russo on drums, Fred Hughes on piano, Rob Levitt on guitar, Max Murray on bass, Aaron Clay on bass also, and Chris Rose on percussion. So, as always, I hope you got something from this show that you can use. Something that inspired you to ask yourself, am I living the life I was meant to live? And something that'll bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. That I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So